From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Edition. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, filling in for Tony Perkins today. Lots to talk about. I will kick off the show with Republican Congressman Michael Cloud of Texas about his trip to the southern border last Thursday. He will give us a firsthand assessment about the illegal immigrants who are pouring across the border there and what he thinks about a federal judge that prevented House Democrats from blocking money to build the border wall. In segment, I will provide a disturbing glimpse into the manufacturing of fake news. Ken Blackwell, FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, will join me about his compelling town hall column. At the bottom of the hour, I will talk to a gutsy Illinois pastor who prayed to open the Illinois legislature last Friday, calling on God to judge the state for supporting laws that shed the blood of innocent babies in the womb, and I'll feature a soundbite from the prayer. In my last segment, we'll talk about the 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square's massacre in China with Travis Weber, who just returned from attending a religious freedom conference in the island nation of Taiwan off China's west coast. You will hear the moving story of a woman from North Korea who defected a number of times and how she ultimately endured a forced abortion. As a reminder, find our podcast at tonyperkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter if you would like, at T Perkins, or me, at Sarah P. Perry. A reminder to you as well that our Baby Hats campaign is still ongoing, and we are halfway to our goal of 90,000 hats. For more information on how you can participate, go to tonyperkins.com and click on the banner. Well, last Thursday, Republican Congressman Michael Cloud of Texas became the latest federal lawmaker to visit the U.S.-Mexico border in order to assess the situation there on the ground. He was joined by Hector Garza of the National Border Patrol Council. That's a Border Patrol agent advocacy organization that promotes policies contributing to national security and opposes efforts that inhibit customs and border protection agents from doing their jobs. Congressman Cloud represents the 27th District of Texas and serves on the Oversight and Reform Committee, as well as the Science, Space, and Technology Committee in the House. Congressman Cloud, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It's good to be here.
Before we talk about your visit to the border, I have to get your reaction to the news just yesterday that U.S. District Court Judge Trevor McFadden in Washington rejected the Democratic House lawsuit to block spending on Trump's plan to build a border wall with Mexico. And Judge Fadden, as you may know, said that the House lacked legal standing to sue the president for allegedly overstepping his power. You must be thrilled with that decision.
Well, we've been suffering under years, decades even, of judicial overreach. And so it's finally refreshing to see a judge who understands the limits of the authority of that post and is willing to abide by it. It's refreshing.
Why did you decide to take a trip to the border in the first place? And what were you hoping that this envoy, and this was you, this was Congressman Jody Heiss, Congressman Glenn Grothman, and you as well, what were you hoping that this envoy to the southern border would accomplish?
Well, I am a new congressman. I got here in July, but I'm from South Texas. And so being from South Texas, we've had a little bit of an understanding of what's going on in the border. Our communities are affected by it personally, our hospitals, our schools. You hate to talk about it, but the morgue even, the ranches in South Texas, they find dead bodies on their property all the time due to this situation. It's really heartbreaking. It's devastating. But when I got here in Washington, there's a whole lot of political rhetoric about what was going on the border. But as I got to talk to people, you realize that not really many people had, one, ever been to the border or really had a clear understanding of what was really going on. And so I had taken my first official congressional trip shortly after being elected, but wanted to go back. And, you know, the situation only has gotten exponentially worse since then. And so I wanted to go back and dig a little deeper on some of the issues. I also bring some other congressmen there to see firsthand who had been wanting to go to the border, and just get an update on what was happening and the situation that was there.
And I think from what we've heard, it is truly a must-be-seen-to-be-believed type situation. We follow the immigration debate and the president's plan to both increase taxes and to put a tariff of 5% on Mexican imports by June 10th. We are very eagerly watching to see whether or not that will have an effect on stemming the tide of illegal immigrants. But for those of us who are here sort of in the enclave of Washington, D.C., I think it's very common that we don't have as much of a sense as those who are living in that district, in the area, who are watching these numbers for themselves. So when you spent time talking with Hector Garza, you took a night excursion across the along the border of the Rio Grande River near Laredo. What did he tell you when you took that tour with him?
Well, they are dealing with just a very precarious situation. They are outmanned. They are outfunded on the border. One of the figures that came out in our discovery trip was cartels are, by best estimates, they're not filing tax returns, but by best estimates are making about $83 million a week. The Border Patrol there was funded at $13 million a year. And so that just shows you the disparity of what they're dealing with. From a technology standpoint, in the Laredo sector, for example, they have cameras to help monitor the situation on the border, but those cameras are 1990s technology. When they're all working, which is about 70% of the time, they cover about 30% of that sector's border. So it's very much hit and miss. Then you go across, look at the manpower, and 40% of the Laredo sector, about 50% of the Rio Grande Valley sector, of the agents are busy doing paperwork now because the system is so overwhelmed by the migrant crisis. And so they're leaving their post on the front lines of the drug trade, the sex trafficking trade, all the illicit activity the cartels are doing to help essentially do paperwork. Mm. And so that just opens up the border. And the thing about this is not haphazard. This is very intentional. The cartels understand all the loopholes of our generous immigration laws, and they take advantage of it to their benefit, to their profit. And they have no regard for human life, very callous regard for human life. They in a sense, like travel agents, go around the world, promising a great life and a future here, and they'll tell people, yeah, you just, here's a water bottle, and, just walk for about an hour north, and you'll be fine. But really, it's day's journey through South Texas hot heat. Many of them, don't make the trip, and others, when they finally do make it to safety, are not in the best condition medically speaking. 40% of the young ladies who are come across have been abused. It's a heartbreaking situation, and so our failure to act in government, ultimately it's Congress's fault, but our failure to act has allowed this situation to fester and just get to a point to where we're entirely overrun.
I want to talk numbers for a second, because these numbers truly are staggering. It wasn't until I actually saw the interview that you conducted with Garza that I really got a sense of the magnanimous problem and why this is such a critical time for us to be involved and active in this debate. 100,000 apprehensions by Customs and Border Protection officers just in the past 2 months alone. And since the beginning of the fiscal year, over 500,000 apprehensions. These numbers are stunning. And then you took an earlier visit to a temporary facility in Donna, Texas, and that's about 80 miles north of the border. In this temporary facility, what did you learn about their numbers?
Well, their numbers, that particular facility houses unaccompanied minors, and so specifically young ladies at that particular facility. And so that facility is actually doing pretty well, but they know that their max capacity is a little over 200 beds. And so they only allow that many people there. So the overcrowding really happens at the border, and then, you know, when they have some beds become available, they find a home for someone or a relative or someone is placed, basically, then they'll send some more at that particular facility. But the thing that was heartbreaking was walking the halls, and then you see a picture with a young lady had written, you know, "I miss mom," and with a drawn a broken heart, and then I mentioned, you know, 40% of them been abused along the journey, and we're allowing this. We're allowing this by not securing our border. We're allowing the cartels to have this kind of evil influence, not only in our country, in the neighborhoods, in our neighborhoods, but throughout the developing world in Central and South America. And so, you know, our failure to secure the border is affecting our communities. If we could, for example, flip a switch now and fix the problem at the border, you know, it had all the technology, we had all the boots on the ground, we had everything we needed to mitigate the situation, all the infrastructure in place, I don't think we would totally understand the impact that we've seen over the last months and years for another decade, when you think of the drugs that have already gotten through. And one thing to remember too is when you read stats about apprehensions, whether people or drugs or whatever, that's what we've apprehended. Flow and apprehensions are two different stats, and they're not necessarily statistically tied to each other. So apprehensions can actually go down because we don't have the manpower, while flow is actually going up. You know, so you know, we've got to deal with this situation. We're doing everything we can to try to get the story out to people in Congress, but also doing what we can to work with the administration to work with them on what they can do in the short term to get something done, because, of course, getting something done in Congress takes a really long time, and we're here at an emergency situation.
So, Congressman, in the minute that we have left, as a result of your trip to the border, are you going to be advocating for particular policies now as a result?
Sure. You know, ultimately, we've got to fix the asylum loophole. We got to fix the magnets that are drawing people here illegally. We need more immigration judges on the ground. But there's some administrative actions that can happen in the short term. For example, we can make virtually every Border Patrol agent an immigration agent. You know, right now, migrants come across and they're put on a waiting list for 2 years for a court date and never show up for that court date. And so that interview for credible fear could happen in 15 minutes right when they come across the border if we had the people trained to do it. We're also giving work visas to them while they wait for their two-year court date. We don't have to give people who are here illegally, who don't have a credible reason to be here or a legitimate claim to be here, we don't have to give them work visas. So it's, again, a situation where they're taking complete advantage of our generosity. It's awesome that we are a nation of immigrants, but we have a right to protect our borders as well.
Congressman Michael Cloud from the 27th District in Texas has been my excellent guest today. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Coming up next, I will provide a disturbing look into the manufacturing behind fake news. Ken Blackwell, FRC's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, joins me to discuss his compelling town hall column right after this.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. There you can find information as well about our EndBirthdayAbortion.com campaign. We'd like to just remind you also that the Equality Act is still set to be scheduled for a vote soon in the Senate. Call the Capitol switchboard 202-225-3121 to tell your senator to vote no. Well, we've heard a lot about it. Fake news. Last week, Ian Bremmer, who is a well-known foreign policy expert and editor-at-large of Time magazine, tweeted a completely fabricated quote from President Trump without offering any indication that the statement was fictitious. It read as follows, quote, President Trump in Tokyo, full colon, Kim Jong-un is smarter and would make a better president than sleepy Joe Biden, end quote. Bremmer wrote this. He provided no further context. And predictably, according to Kenneth Blackwell in his town hall column entitled A Disturbing Glimpse into the Manufacturing of Fake News, the fake news Twitterverse took the bait and the quote at face value. Journalists and lawmakers went on to share the tweet, blasting it all over social media and criticizing Trump for a statement he never actually made. Ken, who has served as the mayor of Cincinnati, the Ohio State Treasurer, and the Ohio Secretary of State, is now our Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, and we are the luckier for it. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's a delight to be with you.
So we are excited to hear that President Trump actually referenced your town hall column on social media, but I guess you're not surprised by the reaction coming from the liberal media to a fictitious Trump quote, are you?
I'm not. And this underscores a fact. The left is heavily populated by those who have imaginations that could rival Walt Disney's. And so they create narratives out of whole cloth that have no resemblance to fact, totally fiction, and then they have a megaphone effect through social media and political commentators on cable television. And so they create a political reality that is far-fetched and great a great distance from the truth. But this is one of the end effects of the march of relativism that we've seen for the last 40, 50 years, where they have attempted and in some cases succeeded in destroying the notion that there are moral absolutes and objective truth.
So give me an example, and there are a number of excellent ones, about how the media responded to the invented Trump quote, because some pretty high-profile individuals actually took it and ran with it.
Yes, you know, Anna Navarro, CNN contributor, went on the air and basically took the bait and advanced the false narrative. There was just a rash of social media people on Twitter, people on Facebook, repeating this big lie. And so they create this false reality. They create a narrative that serves their political mission, and that is to hate Trump. At the end of the day, these folks know that the presidential vote that most voters cast is one that is not just based on policy, but based on how they feel about a personality. So they can, if they can drive this narrative that the president is evil, it means that they create openings for voters who are on the fence to find a reason to go in another direction. But, you know, this doesn't just stop with the president. You know, what about the youngsters at Covington Catholic School in Covington, Kentucky? Mm. They created a false narrative through creative editing of footage that they put on social media that turned these young men into something that they were not.
His attorneys have now sued the Post for $250 million. So one wonders what the consequences are of things like this.
That's why we really do have to be vigilant. We can't let our guards down, and we in fact have to question everything, and in terms of the left's motives, because they have one grand objective, and that is to defeat the president. And we have a classic clash of two models of governance. You know, on the one hand, we have what I call the Obama-fed, you know, growth of the welfare state, and now these new brand Democrats have taken it to another level, and they want, you know, a all-in-out socialist government. On the other hand, you know, you have those of us who believe that there's a correlation between religious liberty and other constitutional rights. When you put a harness on the growth and the reach of government, you enhance individual liberty and freedom. So there's a real clash about how we're going to go as we go into, you know, deeper into the third century of the American story.
And Ian Bremmer finally sorted out fact from fiction after the fact by admitting he had invented what he called the, quote, objectively ludicrous remark for the purposes of apparent experimentation, though he did not specify what precisely that experiment was. And he says he should have been clearer. So, again, one wonders what is at work behind the scenes. Ken Blackwell has been my guest today. I encourage you to visit townhall.com to read his excellent column. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins today. Well, coming up next, I will talk to a gutsy Illinois pastor who prayed in the Illinois legislature last Friday, calling on God to judge them for supporting laws that shed innocent blood. You have to hear it to believe it. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast site. You can find information about our End Birthday Abortion campaign there. Tony on Twitter, at T. Perkins. Me on Twitter, at Sarah P. Perry. Lots to talk about, but now I'm going to shift the focus to the Midwest, the sleepy state of Illinois, where one very brave pastor issued a prayer heard around the world. He opened the State House of the Representatives in prayer last Friday, asking Heaven's Court to judge the state for sanctioning the, quote, destruction of the unborn, end quote, through the passage of an extreme abortion bill, even worse than New York's deadly law. And if you tuned in yesterday, you heard all about the bill that is soon to be signed into law by Governor Pritzker. Let's listen to an excerpt from his prayer.
Lord, you have told us those things which you hate, and among them are hands that shed innocent blood. I stand here in this house, in this high place in Illinois, and ask you, O God, creator of heaven and earth, if there is any blood more innocent than a baby that is wonderfully being created in the womb. God, those unborn children are not hidden from you. The psalmist David exclaimed, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous, how well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. So God, we have made our appeals to the leaders of Illinois this week on behalf of those innocent babies who do not yet have a voice. We have been a voice for those who cannot speak for themselves, as you have commanded us. Those appeals were denied. But we have one final appeal left, and that is to the courts of heaven. God Almighty, I make an appeal to heaven today, to you, the perfect judge, the one who presides over heaven's court. I ask you to rise up, O God, and judge Illinois for the sanctioned destruction of the innocent unborn. For when your judgments are in this state, the inhabitants of Illinois learn righteousness. In this house, I pray for justice to roll down like water, and righteousness like a mighty river. In your judgment, I pray that you would remember mercy, for we know that you, O God, do not want anyone to be destroyed. I ask this in the name of your Son, the one who died for a sinner like me, the one who is appointed to judge the living and the dead. In the name of Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen.
Pastor Musgrave is the pastor at New Beginnings Assembly of God Church in Fairfield, Illinois, and the parent with his wife of five children, including two adopted from China. Pastor Musgrave, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Pastor, I'd love to know how you got a chance to pray for the Illinois legislators in the first place and whether or not you were given any guidance about what you could and couldn't talk about.
Well, this came about through my state representative, Darren Bailey, who is the representative here in southeastern Illinois. And this was set up back in February, and God kind of put it on my heart to pray later in the session. So I'd known since February I was going to be praying. And about a week ago, I did receive a letter from the office of the clerk, kind of giving me some instructions not to proselytize and not to pray in any one name.
So you issued a very, very strong prayer on abortion. And we have, unfortunately, a very brief segment here. But tell me why abortion in particular was laid on your heart.
Well, you know, there are a lot of issues in Illinois that I pay attention to. Yeah, Illinois is in a financial crisis. We have a moral crisis going on. There are so many different topics that I'm aware of. But the most important topic I think that Illinois is dealing with, as our governor, J.B. Pritzker, had promised to make Illinois the most progressive state in the nation when it comes to abortion, mm-hmm. that abortion deals with life and death. It is the most divisive, the most important issue, I believe, that our country has faced since slavery. And as I saw this bill was going to pass, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Sunday night on the last week of the legislative session, they pulled this bill back out. It had been shoved back in subcommittee. They had a rigged committee hearing where they had very limited debate. They give the Republican side 1 hour's notice. They called it on a Sunday evening, and they decided to push that bill through. And as I sat there and watched that and heard what they were doing, it broke my heart that we are allowing this in my state. And with the passage a few years ago of HB 40 in Illinois, now they make taxpayers cooperate in this heinous act of abortion by using tax dollars to fund it.
So in the minute that we have left, I understand five Democratic legislators actually walked out and two physically turned their backs to you during the prayer. How did you take that?
Well, I was focused on praying. I wasn't just looking out at everyone in there. So I was unaware of it until after it was over. And also from someone who's standing up there with me, they said there was a discernible hiss from the crowd. Mm. That I was just focused on praying to God. My prayer was not to them, it was to God.
Oh, Pastor Musgrave, I love stories of this kind of bravery and commitment. I hope there are other pastors and other Christians who are listening today who are encouraged to be just as bold as you have been. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, 30 years ago today, the Chinese government fired into student-led protester groups who were protesting in the name of peaceful democracy. I'll talk the 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square with Travis Weber, who's just returned from a religious freedom conference from Taiwan. We'll be right back.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC Action. I am filling in for Tony Perkins. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast site. Tony's Twitter, at T Perkins. Mine, at Sarah P. Perry. Remember that we are encouraging all of our listeners to call their senators, 202-225-3121, as we wait for a vote on the Equality Act. Well, 30 years ago today, the Chinese People's Liberation Army fired into a crowd of its own demonstrators, peaceful students who were protesting in the name of democracy. Thousands of student-led protesters were killed, though the Chinese government has never released official numbers on that tally. It marked a brutal end to the pro-democracy demonstrations that had been going on for weeks in Tiananmen Square. And if you're like me, you remember the distinct imagery of the single man in the white shirt and the dark pants standing in front of a tank, moving side to side, preventing his movement and to protect his fellow students. Ariel DiTurco, who is a research assistant here at FRC, noted in her blog post today that Chinese officials continue to, quote, dig in their heels and defend the actions taken by the Communist Party, which has come to be known as the Tiananmen Square Massacre. Well, joining me today to talk about both the Tiananmen Square Massacre and what he learned at the Taiwan Religious Freedom Conference, which took place just a few days ago, is our own Travis Weber, FRC's VP of Public Policy and Director of the Center for Religious Liberty. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
So it seems that the Chinese communist officials have no ability to blush or indicate that they have any remorse, considering the fact that they don't officially not acknowledge what happened in Tiananmen Square and have yet to release actual numbers on what happened 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just very difficult for them to acknowledge this in all its reality, because doing so would show them to have been dead wrong on the way they failed to respect human rights, religious freedom. So for them to come out now and fully acknowledge what happened and how they acted in regard to those events is something they can't really do. And so they continue to try to cover it up more and more now in the age of the internet, trying to censor those opinions and views online. And I think, you know, the lesson for us today, 30 years later, is to recognize that the same party that led to that crackdown is the party that represses religious freedom and human rights today and increasingly is cracking down on free religious expression. They're both derived from the same coercive grip on power and paranoid grip on power that the leaders of China have today and had then. And that's, you know, something we need to continue to call out and pressure them on now in the U.S.-China relationship.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo issued a blistering rebuke of the Chinese government on the day of the anniversary and stated that the hopes for a more open, tolerant society have been dashed. Quote, China's one-party state tolerates no dissent and abuses human rights whenever it serves its interests. Do you think that's an overstatement or an accurate assessment of the situation?
I fully agree with Secretary Pompeo. And his statement comes at a great time as we need to call out China's failure to respect human rights. It's a key part of the U.S.-China relationship. And as we talk about trade with them, we need to incorporate religious freedom and human rights into that. When Vice President Pence gave an address on China last year at the Hudson Institute, it was very significant because he noted religious freedom in the context of that relationship. Ambassador at Large Brownback was in Hong Kong a short while ago, gave a significant speech on China. The U.S. government, the Trump administration, what President Trump is doing in the U.S.-China relationship is very significant, including it's this focus on human rights and religious freedom. And I think we need to expand that focus and expand the way that these issues are dealt with, because there's a clear contrast between the American way of doing things, religious freedom, and the Chinese way of doing things, failure to respect religious freedom. Now, in Taiwan last week, the conference was significant for a number of reasons, but one, it really highlighted the contrast between Taiwan and China. I mean, Taiwan, as we know, going back decades, is, you know, seen by China as part of its national entity, its national ethos, but Taiwan is very different because Taiwan is a flourishing democracy, respects religious freedom, which it had not always respected religious freedom in its past, but currently you have an open, free, flourishing society there. And this is very significant because it draws a stark distinction with China. National Security Advisor John Bolton recently met with Taiwan's top defense official. It's the first time since 1979. This is also significant. It plays into the U.S. approach to this, recognizing the good things Taiwan is doing, condemning China's abuses, religious freedom abuses, which we're reminded of 30 years after Tiananmen.
Interesting that Ken Starr, who was one of the participants in this Taiwanese International Religious Freedom Conference, just had an excellent op-ed, but he pointed specifically to Bob Fu, who is the director of China Aid. Can you talk a little bit about his role in the International Religious Freedom Conference and kind of what he's experienced since having emigrated out of China?
Yeah, so Bob Fu, a founder and president of China Aid, was one of the organizers of this conference, really brought a lot of folks together to highlight the problems with China. He's a Chinese dissident himself, former pastor in China, was involved in the Tiananmen crackdown. And I'm actually, you know, I had the pleasure of interacting with Bob at this conference, going to continue to see him in the coming days. So we really want folks to understand in the United States, understand the persecuted church in China, understand what's going on with them, so we can be praying for them, linking arms with them. You know, so Bob is someone who really focuses on China from the outside. Now, there are a lot of persecuted believers in China, and they have different methods and ways of dealing with this in terms of how they might advocate for themselves. But one thing we who are outside China must do is call down pressure from the U.S. government on China, because it's just unacceptable what they're doing. Judge Starr was at this conference, too. I was pleased to be able to see him over there. And he, in his past, was involved with trying to bring over Chinese dissidents. And, you know, he's very much involved with making sure this issue is elevated now, and advocacy the advocacy efforts are moved down the field in terms of international religious freedom. So a number of good leaders at this conference from a variety of different countries. I mean, the conference focused on Asia overall. So we had people from Mongolia there, Nepal, India, Indonesia, Malaysia, other countries in Asia. We had a North Korean defector there who's currently living in South Korea give a powerful testimony. We even had someone addressing Nigeria's issues. So the conference dealt with religious freedom overall, but obviously we cannot ignore the 500-pound gorilla in the room right now, which is China. And as we engage with China from the perspective of the United States, as Europe engages on trade issues, really this is a worldwide issue that people need to – we can't escape it. I mean, it's not just a U.S.-China issue, but as the world engages with China, the world needs to call attention to China's religious freedom and human rights. And this is an effective strategy because they are sensitive to it. They do not want to be perceived as not part of the modern world. But on this issue, they very much are not a part of the modern world. And until they correct their act on religious freedom, they can't be a part of that, the modern era on these issues. So we really need to keep the attention on this issue in China.
So let's talk specifically about numbers and specifics as concerns religious freedom or lack thereof in the country of China. I want to talk a little bit about the persecution of Christians in China and what we're seeing in terms of that particular belief system specifically.
Yeah, so the persecution of Christians has been going on for some time, but according to the data we have, and it's always a struggle to continue to get more accurate information on what's going on, but what we do know, in the past few years, there as part of an effort to make Chinese, so to speak, the religious institutions and communities in that country, we're seeing an increased efforts to bring the church under Chinese control. Anything that's not approved by the Chinese government is removed from a church. The church may be demolished. Believers may be detained, forced underground. So the numbers, as far as we know, we do believe that there in the last year there have been over 100,000 Chinese Christians imprisoned. This is a very China is a big country, but that's still a significant number. We do believe that the persecution of the church is very widespread. And as this is happening, believers are forced into smaller and smaller communities underground. In the Uyghur Muslim community in the western Xinjiang province, there are up to 15 million Uyghurs in that community. We believe that the detention camps that are built to re-educate them, really, really concentration camps of a sort, have been holding up to 3 million in the 1 to 3 million number range. Now, the Chinese government will not acknowledge these camps. It'll claim they're just to defeat extremism, but we know that they're an attempt to control that community. Very significant number of Uyghurs. We received information saying that the Chinese government has blood tested its Muslim Uyghur population, which could lay the groundwork for organ harvesting of that community, like we saw them doing to the Falun Gong, which has been documented as the worldwide organ trade needs to draw from China. Very significant, very evil actions. And these are significant numbers, even for a country like China with well over a billion people, significant numbers of religious communities persecuted in China.
And they've recognized the standing of Christianity worldwide as being a dominant religion and so have attempted a thought reform or a theology reform campaign specifically directed at Christianity. What is that all about?
Yeah, I mean, so the thought reform, the campaign is to try to paint religion, Christianity included, as subservient to the state, as patriotic, as in line with the state. Now, obviously, we have our own understanding of patriotism. In the Chinese government's view, this is something that religion is under the state, not over. Here, our understanding of religious freedom is that you cannot interfere with the religious believer's obligation to God. Obviously, you need an orderly society. But there, the assumption is not that this is a relationship to be left free, but rather something that's fully and properly brought under the control of the state. So in the Christian context, this might mean erasing one of the Ten Commandments, removing a cross, changing religious imagery to promote the Chinese government's view of what a proper Chinese Christian might be. Now, the thing to remember in all this, they're constantly trying to paint this as a Western effort, Christianity, as something from the West. And this is very significant because the reality is, as we know, Christianity is not a Western religion or idea. It's something for the whole world, a message from God about truth, about what he did on the cross through Jesus. And so this, you know, this is something that if more and more people wake up and begin to see, grow to see that this is just truth that the government is trying to keep from them, that'll be a very key moment because it can no longer be painted as some sinister outside plot, but rather just freedom that the Chinese government is trying to suppress.
So the expanse of persecution of Christians among other faiths, we know minors are banned from entering churches. They've actually gone beyond Mao and his regime by saying now minors under the age of 18 can no longer receive religious instruction overall. The online Bible sales are blocked. The Catholic Catechism is censored. Back in April, Chinese authorities prevented state-sanctioned churches, those that actually have the blessing of the Communist Party, from holding worship services for Easter. I mean, this is pandemic, and it is severe. And it's interesting to hear someone who was so close in that religious freedom conference who is speaking with individuals who have suffered under those communist regimes. There was one in particular, a North Korean defector, and I want to talk about her story because that was one that particularly impacted you. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. Very powerful story of a North Korean defector who had left North Korea and was sent back multiple times, eventually made her way to freedom in South Korea. But one of the times that she was sent back to North Korea, she found a Bible, was reading it, was detained for doing so. And while detained, she suffered a forced abortion at the hands of North Korean police. Mm. And this, at this moment when she was in such pain, so far into her struggle for freedom, she cried out to God, basically saying, God, why are you doing this? Why are you allowing this to happen to me? And she heard God tell her, now you know you feel pain, you feel this pain. Now you know the pain that I felt when I sent my son into the world to die on the cross. And for her, she saw the love of God because she knew in her situation, which none of us can really understand, in her situation, she saw how much God loved her and loved us. Her story is incredible for all these reasons, just her testimony, what she went through, her struggle for freedom. And I was able to interact with her at this conference in Taiwan to see the grace in her life as she was there with one of her daughters. Incredible, powerful story. There are others like this. You know, some of them we're never going to know, but the ones we do know, I think we need to share. We need people around the United States. We still have our freedom here to speak up on behalf of these people, these individuals persecuted in China, and those in North Korea who suffer horrendous treatment and detention in camps. They can't speak up for themselves. So while we can, we need to let our voices be heard by our elected officials here in Washington. We need to let them know that we care about religious freedom here and around the world, and we want them to prioritize religious freedom as we deal with these foreign countries. But very powerful testimony from this defector. I hope to be able to bring her to one of our conferences at some point because it was encouraging. As difficult as that was, it was such a powerful testimony to me, and I think people need to hear it.
I'm hoping what this does for the listeners who are tuned in today is not only embolden them to stand firm on what they know to be the truth here in the United States, which is still a democratic country, no matter what the mob-thinking progressivist left would tell you, but I also hope what it does is draw attention to other opportunities to see God at work through very difficult circumstances. The fact that she took out of that a message of hope and understanding when, in fact, she's suffering one of the most horrific tragedies I could ever imagine, particularly as a mother, is so compelling to me. So individuals like this North Korean defector, like Bob Fu, who has himself been subjected to this kind of human rights regime, really finds itself, I think, hitting home with those individuals who may think that the slings and arrows of critique that we get from the Democratic left is sometimes enough to really make it hurt, when in fact, we still have it very, very good and very, very free. Travis Weber, our Vice President of Policy and Director of the Center on Religious Liberty, has been my guest today. You've been listening to Washington Watch. Go to TonyPerkins.com for more information about today's broadcast and resources that are associated with today's guests. We will see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.